The November issue will be Gourmet Magazine's last. Ad revenue has dropped nearly 43%, and publisher Condé Nast has pulled the plug. Weekend Edition food commentator Bonnie Wolfe finds reactions are mixed.
There is as much shock as chagrin. Gourmet Magazine has always been there. Well, at least for 68 years. It is the iconic food chronicle, the first of its kind, an institution. Along with Julia Child, Gourmet introduced Americans to a new world of food. Now, that world has changed. I did an unscientific survey on Gourmet's demise. Reactions varied from, I could care less, to, I'm in mourning. Some call it elitist, while others say it's the only food magazine that hasn't been dumbed down. Some love the literate prose, others want more recipes, less writing. Editor Ruth Reichel is praised and damned. But, like the magazine, people know her name. The World Wide Web did the magazine no favors. Why invite more clutter when you can go online to Epicurious, a gourmet partner, and get the same recipes for free? But Gourmet is more than recipes. It approaches food as culture. It inspired generations of cooks to reach beyond the known. My friend Peggy in Denver fantasizes about going to that little cafe in Montreal or the B&B on the coast of Maine. Joanne emailed, I have traveled to Chile, remote Chinese villages, and hidden corners of New York City thanks to Gourmet articles. And people hang on to them. My friend Jennifer has every copy since 1977. The November issue is especially prized for holiday planning. Every year before Thanksgiving, Jennifer hauls out all 32 of her November gourmets. Today's food magazines reflect a world of different tastes. Worried about fat? Get cooking light. On a budget? Every day with Rachel Ray. It's also generational. My friends are of a certain age. Our children, in their 20s, cook differently, if they cook at all. With some happy exceptions, they don't use a magazine like Gourmet for dinner party inspiration. And they live in a digital world. My 28-year-old son says Gourmet, as well as most print publications, has no relevance to his generation. Even the word gourmet is old-fashioned, replaced by the infelicitous term foodie. Blogs, recipe sites, and food TV will inspire the next generation of cooks. But for those who see the death of gourmet as the loss of an old friend, there will be one last November issue. Hang on to it.
Bonnie Wolfe is the author of Talking With My Mouthful and editor of NPR's Kitchen Window.
And here's a development, or a banking innovation anyway, for the developing world that's now catching on in the United States. It's a microfinancing website called Kiva.org. It lets Americans make loans to struggling entrepreneurs across the globe. Recently, the website extended its service to American small businesses who've been having a hard time getting credit. NPR's Charlotte Baer reports on one of those businesses.
Tanis Lee Harrison stands on her tiptoes to reach the top shelf of a client's laundry closet. She's ready to scour filthy corners with her homemade cleaning solution and acrylic nails. Yet even after 3 years of owning a housekeeping business, she wasn't prepared for this mess.
Oh my God! Oh my God, this is not... This isn't even funny.
Harrison never thought she'd be a cleaner. The 47-year-old was desperate when her husband's notary work dried up. Her family of three was barely getting by in East Palo Alto, California.
That's when I had called a friend of mine and said, do you know anyone who needs anything done? Because I really need to, I'm going to lose a house. So she said, well, my mom's in Stockton, if you don't mind going there. And I said, sure. I found out later Stockton's like 3 hours away.
Harrison says the work poured in. She had to hire an employee, buy heavy-duty vacuums, and find extra storage. But she couldn't get a loan or even a credit card. She'd emigrated from Canada and didn't have a credit history in the U.S.
I did try to get credit through places like Walmart or something like that. I didn't get it from there. I didn't get it from the bank because my Social Security number is so young, I have no credit. There's nothing there.
Then she heard about loans on the Kiva website. The site connects small business owners who need cash with internet users who want to open their wallets. The potential investor can loan as little as $25. Within a single day, nearly 80 people fulfilled Harrison's $2,000 request.
It's another growth spurt for me. Very personal thing to me. I think I'm going to tear up.
microloans typically have low interest rates and easy payback terms. Harrison will pay hers off in $100 monthly installments. Kiva just recently made these loans an option for U.S. borrowers. The San Francisco-based organization thought it might help the economy in its own backyard.
We know that small businesses are kind of the cornerstone of the economy. It's a real growth driver of the U.S.
That's Premal Shah. He's the president of Kiva.
Even before the credit crunch, small business loans were hard. Post-credit crunch, it's really, really hard. Kiva really started thinking about, wow, you know, we're allowing people in the developing world to be able to request loans. Why not uncrunch America and, you know, let people here in the U.S. request loans and see if the internet community wants to fund them on Kiva?
A small number of lenders protested the decision. Tom Behan was one of them. He says Kiva's mission is to alleviate poverty, so it should disregard the U.S. since it's the richest country in the world.
There are over 2 billion people in the world who live in extreme poverty. Poverty is, as defined by the UN, trying to get by on less than $2 a day. And it also means they don't have access to basic necessities that we do here in the U.S., like free education, free health care if you need it, and the services of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, of social and religious and nonprofit groups that are dealing with every kind of need.
Behan and other unhappy lenders are switching to a different organization. That won't change Kiva's course. According to Premal Shah, Kiva has attracted more money since U.S. loans began, and he says that's good for entrepreneurs all over the world. Charla Bear, NPR News.
This week, a young man named Khalif Rollins won a $10,000 grand prize at the 2009 National Youth Entrepreneurship Competition. He's 17 years old from Carson, California, which is in the L.A. metropolitan area, and won for his business that sells custom T-shirts with inspirational designs. Mr. Rollins competed against 27 finalists and 24,000 initial high school entrants for an award given by the Nonprofit Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship. Khalif Rollins joins us from New York. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Inspirational designs for urban youths. Like what?
For example, we have several shirts, but for example, we have a shirt that says, "Caution, educated black male." We have shirts with like quotes from urban leaders like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. But one, we have an Obama shirt as well. Just shirts that have leadership themes and positive messages out there for people who want to support their urban leaders.
Mm-hmm. Who designs them?
My brother, Anthony Rollins.
And how old is he?
He's 22.
And you, what's the name of your company?
It's Free Country Clothing, PHREEKOUNTRY.
What's the best seller?
Our best seller so far had to be the Obama shirt due to the campaign and everything.
Yeah.
But as of now, since we made this new design, the one I told you about, the educated African-American male,
yeah,
that seems like that's going to be the next best seller. Everyone seems to like that one as well.
$10,000. It's a nice prize.
Yes.
Have any
nice prize.
Any plans for it?
Yeah, we're going to first get a silk screen machine, next rank up from what we do now, heat press, just to make better quality shirts. And the rest of the money go back towards the business, just to get all the equipment and more stuff that we need for the business just to keep moving forward.
Are you permitted to take, $5 of that and treat yourself to a Frappuccino or something?
Yeah. Actually, we'll take a few, maybe $20 or $30 out of there, and me and my brother go celebrate at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles.
Ah, I've been to Roscoe's.
Yeah. Famous. How you like it?
I liked it a lot. Famous place. I think it's nice that you and your brother are in business together.
Yeah.
Other family members?
My mom. I hired my mom as my CFO.
Well, mothers are CFOs whether you
right.
hire them or not, aren't they?
Right. And she worked as an accountant, so she's good in that field of work. I pay a little money to her for the electricity I use for my equipment.
Yeah.
But other than that, she just wants to see me do well, so she just says I could just do it, and she's just proud of me, so she don't really ask for that for money.
Well, I hope you and your chief financial officer maintain a good working relationship. It's important.
Yeah, we will.
Mr. Rollins, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Khalif Rollins, 2009 winner of the National Youth Entrepreneurship Competition. To get a look at a few of his T-shirts, come to our website, npr.org. This is NPR News.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. This weekend, store shelves are piled high with Halloween costumes, plastic pumpkins, and candy corn. But right next to the goblins, you're likely to find Santa. Store managers are hoping to move shoppers straight from Halloween to the ho-ho holidays. Here to talk about the holiday retail outlook is NPR's senior business editor, Marilyn G. Wax. Marilyn, it's good to see you again.
Hi, Leanne. Nice to see you again.
Before we start talking about holiday shopping, what's the mood of most consumers right now?
Well, we just got a new report this past week from a trade group that represents shopping centers, and they found that sales were brightening a little bit. Now, when I say a little, I mean a really little bit. It was only up a tenth of a percent. But, you know, that was the first rise since July of 08, and we'll take good news where we can find it. But retailers know that this is still a tough economy. Their customers are willing to spend more on back-to-school clothes in September, but they're finding that in October, when they do surveys, the National Retail Federation says they expect weak Halloween sales this month. Last year, Americans spent about $5.8 billion on Halloween. This year, we're probably more like $4.7 billion. So lots of people are planning to skip those costume parties this year.
So that's why there are so many Christmas decorations in the stores, because the retailers are just trying to skip over Halloween and get right to the holidays?
That's exactly right. The retailers are really in a race to make it feel like December as soon as possible. They think they have to get a head start because they've got three big hurdles to get over. For one thing, the unemployment rate is about 9.8%, and last holiday season it was only about 7%. Number two, paychecks are pinched. People are working shorter hours, so they have less income. And number three, credit isn't easy to get like it used to be a few years ago. One way that retailers are fighting this credit crunch is by pushing layaway plans. Those are the plans where shoppers can pay off their purchases in installments over a number of weeks. So you pick out what you want, the store holds the merchandise, and when the final payment is made, you can come in and pick up your gifts and not have to worry about any huge credit card payments in January. Kmart, Burlington Coat Factory, a lot of other retailers are pushing this layaway idea. But the only way to make it work is to make sure that the holiday merchandise is in the store right now so that you have time to make those installments over a number of weeks.
What else are the retailers doing to get our attention?
Well, this is kind of good news. I guess they're competing pretty hard on price. Nintendo, for example, the game manufacturer, they cut $50 from the price of those Wii consoles, and they're already seeing good results. It seems to be stirring up interest for holiday sales. Walmart, they've been pushing this idea of $10 toys. So they've got a long list of things that you can come into the store and get a $10 toy, and they're not junky things. They're things kids might want. So really popular Barbie dolls, the Transformer action figures. And another strategy that's kind of interesting is more of these pop-up stores that you see only for holiday sales. When a company wants to open a store, it's expensive. You have to put in a long-term lease and hire permanent employees and all that. But what they're trying to do this year is there's so much vacant commercial real estate that you can just open a store that'll be there for a couple of weeks and disappear in January. So Toys R Us is really a leader in this. They're planning to open scores of these holiday stores.
Do you think all these strategies are going to work?
Well, you know, retailers know that this is a weak economy. They know people are out of work. But we also know that Americans love to shop. And surveys are finding that there may be some pent-up demand out there that people are getting a little bit tired of holding back. So store managers are just figuring, look, if I can get the right merchandise at the right price in the right location, maybe this Christmas holiday season won't be terrific, but it won't be as bad as we were fearing just a few months ago.
NPR's senior business editor, Marilyn G. Wax. Marilyn, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Leanne.